Hey, Trey here. Two things. First, I'm not sure if you know it, but Us and Them was honored with 4 Associated Press Broadcasters Awards, including one for excellence in public service through journalism. Second, it's the time for the Spring Pledge Drive at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And if you value the work that our Us and Them team does in telling the stories about the things that divide Americans, would you consider making a pledge of support to West Virginia Public Broadcasting? You can call or text to 1-800-RADIO-87, or you can go online to WV Public and find the little red button at the upper right-hand corner. And when you pledge, let them know where you live and that you're a listener of Us and Them. Doing this would be a big help for our show and the other great programming at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And thank you so much. Hey, this is Trey Kay, and you're listening to Us and Them from PRX and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. We tell stories about the things that divide people, no matter where they're from. And we tell stories about people who find ways to speak honestly to each other, trying to heal those divisions. Music can do that. I know because I'm a musician. I've played music with people who see the world very differently than I do. From anarchist punk rockers at a club in Manhattan to rural, Bible-toting, scripture-quoting gospel lovers up in Campbell's Creek, West Virginia. And in each situation, sharing a tune has a depth and an intimacy that can cut through all of the us-and-them tension. But some music carries a political message, and some musicians use their work to speak their truth. A while back, I went to the Rockwood Music Hall. It's a live music venue in New York City. I wanted to meet up with this band that I'd heard about. If you've been listening to Us and Them for a while, you know that I split my time between New York and West Virginia, where I grew up. So I was pretty pumped to be in a club in New York listening to some Appalachian string band music. But I was especially excited because this band has its roots in 2 very distinct cultures. This is a bluegrass band. From Argentina. Maria, Maria del agua, Maria del cielo, qué linda Maria. Maria, Maria divina, qué suerte que tuve tenerte en mi vida. The band's called Che Apalache, and they're just about the only bluegrass band you're going to hear from Buenos Aires. Some of their music sounds like traditional Bill Monroe bluegrass, and some of it doesn't. 2 of the guys are from Argentina, and one's from Mexico, and one guy's from the U.S. That's the guy from the U.S. singing. And I want you to meet him, because I think he's got a very us and them story.
Thank you. Muchas gracias.
Joe Troop is the founder of Che Apalache. And he says the name means something like yo, hillbilly, in Spanish. Joe is in his 30s, and he spent most of his adulthood living overseas.
I play the fiddle, play the banjo, I write songs, I compose instrumental music, and I love learning foreign languages. I've been a world traveler. I've lived, I guess, 14 years outside of the United States, 2 in Spain, 2 in Japan, almost 10 in Argentina.
So you grew up in North Carolina. Tell me how it was that you connected with Appalachian music.
My older brother he's like 8 or 9 years older than me, and he took me up to Appalachian State University where he was in school to take me on a camping trip. I think we took a number of trips. I must have been 14 years old. There was a little diner on the side of the road, and it said Doc Watson, live music tonight. So we walked in there. He said, "Joe, you'll probably like this. You know, great big brother. I love him to death." And when I sat like literally right in front of Doc Watson and watched him play with his family, and that was profoundly moving. I found myself in a way. And then my school took a trip to the Appalachian Mountains, and on that camping trip, a couple of the counselors took out their instruments beside a bonfire and played bluegrass for, you know, a few bluegrass songs. There was a banjo and a guitar, but it was the most wonderful experience, just being out in the middle of nowhere. Like, we hiked in, they had their instruments, and then bam, there was an explosion of sound that I'd never really felt out in the middle of nature. Also, like, the ties of this music with the black walnut and the river birch, and just the smell of the forest and the breath of the soil and all the, oh man, it's so meaningful. Appalachia is such a beautiful place, and the music of Appalachia is so beautiful.
One thing I want to know is that you're a gay man. I'm a musician, and I've played, you know, in bluegrass, you know, jams and stuff like that. And I've heard homophobic talk, you know, in those types of circles. And I'm wondering, how was that for you?
Well, it's
did you find yourself welcome?
You know, I had friends my own age. One of my closest friends in bluegrass when I was in, you know, like a freshman in college, his father came out as gay the same year I came out as gay. And, you know, when you know something in your heart, like I knew it was fine. I never had any fear of burning in hell, because thankfully I was not raised in a fundamentalist environment. I was raised going to church, yes, but not on a dogmatic level. I had no fear of burning in hell for being a homosexual. So I was fortunate not to have to deal with that side of things. And a lot of gay people in my same region are not that fortunate. There's a moralist component that I did not have to deal with too much, but I did deal with scornful looks and disgust on other people's faces. So I just kept my secret through high school, because I guess the only person that I came across in media was on MTV's show The Real World. His name was Pedro, a really cool guy, but he was dying of AIDS, and he died of AIDS. And so those were my reference points for homosexuals. I had not been given a book by James Baldwin. I was not aware of Tennessee Williams. That narrative was hidden from me. When I was 19, a friend told me about an exchange program in Seville, Spain, and I had heard Spain was a much more relaxed climate towards homosexuals.
So is that in some ways how you started kind of traveling the world? I kept wondering, did it have something to do with comfortable with your sexuality, or exploring music, or was it both?
It was all of those things. It was also... there's this Mexican restaurant in North Carolina, in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, called La Carreta. And we used to go there with my family. And there were a couple guys on the waiting staff that were, they did not speak much English. But every time I walked in there as a little boy, they looked at me because I tried to speak Spanish. I was learning Spanish in school, and I would go up and say a few words. And they were just like proud of me for wanting to speak Spanish, and they would always approach me as I walked in. Hey, bato, you know, I don't even remember what they said to me, but I just know I felt like, wow, emboldened. That got me really interested in the world outside of the world I was born in, and the idea of communicating different codes. And I had marvelous teachers. My Spanish teachers noticed that I liked it, and they're like, "Yeah, you really like this." They gave me dictionaries. They hooked it up, and I just got.
Just for me, yeah. It's very clear here when you sing it. You know, it's clear that you love the language. You're not just
I've dedicated my life to the language. As much time as I've spent playing music, I've spent living the Spanish language. It's fully intertwined with my essence. I just, yeah.
Gracias a Dios.
Gracias a Dios.
Sí, gracias a Dios, gracias al...
Al mundo.
Al mundo, al universo, al cosmos.
How did you start? How did you form the band?
The band formed because, well, these guys came to me for banjo classes in Buenos Aires, and I met them all as students, and I started teaching them the codes of bluegrass. For lack of better resources, they wound up with me as a bluegrass teacher.
But is bluegrass a big deal in Argentina?
No, that's why they didn't have any other option. They just got stuck with my sorry ass.
Well, why were they interested in it?
Because they have very unique souls, and they just they relate to a genre of world music that is very... it's virtually unknown where they're from. They maybe seen it in movies or, but they're just, you know, cool people. That imagine like a guy from North Carolina. Had I, studied, well, actually I don't want to toot my own horn, but I did, you know, get really big into flamenco vocals, you know, I'm not good at it, but I really tried to be good at it. But you know, but these guys actually became really proficient Appalachian string band musicians. So they're special people. They also went along with me, and they gave me the ability to be their teacher. And it's hard to, you know, these days, allowing someone to teach you. Most people just want to be told how good they are. But these guys are unique in the fact that they're very good, you know. They were great students, and then they got better than me, and then that's the rest is history.
They started playing as a band back in 2013, and Joe Troop makes no bones about it. Che Apalache's music is often political. Is it a coincidence that you guys are kind of coming out with an album and doing all this touring at this time in what's happening in our country right now?
It's not a coincidence at all. In fact, I feel so energized and pumped up and useful right now, because I could start telling you about the kind of people that come up to us after our gigs, and it is really inspiring. And if we can create sort of the theme song, I guess the soundtrack for people that are doing important work through our music, that makes this dream even more significant.
I want to keep you on that thought. I mean, what would the theme song be, or what would be the message of that theme song?
Well, I'll give you an example. The other day in Brevard, North Carolina, a couple came up to us after our show. You know, we do songs that touch on immigration and try to humanize people that are so vehemently villainized in media, you know, undocumented immigrants, and particularly Latin American immigrants. A couple came up to us while we were signing CDs. They just said, you know, thank you. We just adopted a child from Guatemala, and as soon as we heard your song, The Dreamer, and your work, you guys just became our house band. Like, it gives them music.
The band in their house.
Yeah, like, they're listening to our music, and it means something to them. And that, for us, just, like, brings us to tears.
Tell us about the song, The Dreamer. Tell us about how that came about.
You know, I kind of have a stockpile of melodies and catchy songs, you know, that I eventually select themes for. And I met this guy named Moises Serrano at the National Association of Latino Arts and Culture Conference in Charlotte, North Carolina in 2017. He was talking about his film Forbidden, Undocumented and Queer in Rural America. It's a documentary in which he was featured. He was there with his mother, and he was talking about that film, which is, in effect, the story of a DACA recipient that got to the United States when he was 1 year old.
Poor baby Moses wasn't but 1 year old when his mom crossed the border.
And he grew up in North Carolina. He did receive DACA when you could, because, you know, no one's getting DACA anymore. So he's a dreamer. But that doesn't mean he has permanent residence or citizenship. It just means he is not going to get deported, perhaps. So he can't leave the country. He's a gay man like myself. His partner's French. They met. He got a big scholarship to go to a college in New York State, Sarah Lawrence. And his, you know, the love of his life is in Europe. And he can't go, because if he goes, he can't get back in here.
Asher has sunset fades to dusk, and summer green gives way to auburn. And to the wilds was Moses thrust, for to wait against rough water. Now you and I can sing a song, and we can build. Take a stand where we change our broken nation. For when all is said and done, and this tired old race is run, is there none beneath the sun after all is said and done?
Talked before, and you've told me that how you're perceived or how you're received is different in every place. So tell me just quickly about the folks who love you.
The folks who love us are extremely varied, but most of the time they're people who want a new narrative, who want to see a different future, or who want to imagine a different future. And I think they're the kind of people who realize that that's not going to happen overnight. But they see some sort of hope in the symbolism of our band. And that's why we're putting it out there. We are sort of a globalized symbolic representation of what the future could be, but that's not reality. I mean, we're making art to sort of inspire a new future or something. That's what we think about it. You know, we would like to see something different in this world. Wouldn't it be great if 50 years from now, all schools were funded equally, if there was no more racial prejudice in the Southeast United States, if homophobia was completely eradicated?
I asked about the people who love you, love the band. Tell me a little bit about the experience you have with the people who don't love you.
It's terrifying. I've looked at the face of, even this past weekend in Brevard, North Carolina, I got sternly reprimanded by two women, incidentally. It's usually men. But on this occasion, I got this kind of scolding by these two women, probably in their early 60s, who came up and said, "You're really not from here anymore. Your music is not good."
Come friends, come gather round, for to sing we joyfully. Let us sing about a better world, where different paths have been unfurled, of a land where freedom rings from way up high on the mountainside.
When you sang your song, The Wall, the a cappella song, yeah. That when I've been describing it to people, I'm saying it's really clear what this is about. Mm-hmm. So you're saying that this song that you sing in traditional Appalachian harmony,
it stings them so hard. They are not used to feeling uncomfortable in public places, because the people that get up and walk out are the kind of people who never are made to feel uncomfortable.
But let's be clear about this. It's a song that's in Appalachian mountain tradition.
Well, I think one of the reasons they get so uncomfortable is because the first three verses, they're immediately captivated. It immediately resonates with them, because it's like, wow, a young group singing
four-part gospel in the style of music that I love.
From way up there, it's plain to see.
Regardless of one's race or creed, and hearts were all the same. Come, sisters, brothers.
And then, boom, hits him right in the gut.
There's all kinds of talk about building the wall down along the southern border.
But building a wall between me and you.
Lord, and if such nonsense should come true, then we'll have to knock it down.
Joe says it's that line about knocking down the border wall that really gets to some people.
And they get angry.
To love thy neighbor as thyself is a righteous law to live by.
But leaders seen a different song.
They break us up so they stay strong. And ignorantly we're strung along until we meet our doom. Yes, our leaders are so ripe with sin. They feed us a chance to rope us in. But someday soon we'll find, my friends, that we're pinned against the wall. Come, friends, come gather round. For to sing, oh, sing we joyfully.
Let us sing about a better world.
Where better paths will soon unfurl. No man's blood shall stain the sword of a land where freedom rings.
Tell me about your new album that's out, which is titled Rearrange My Heart. Why that title?
A lot of these songs come from that state in which you're just lying on a floor and kind of are humble at the feet of creation, you know what I mean? And being open to accepting your own mortality and the fact that this is just a whisper in the wind of time, each and every one of our lives, it can all disappear very quickly. And so I was reflecting a lot upon that, also upon the death of several amazing people over the last years, friends of mine and acquaintances that really marked my life and my life philosophy. Wouldn't it be great if we could just humbly group together lovingly and rearrange our hearts?
It seems like you're talking about how it is that we are maybe rely less on our will to kind of muscle things
right
through, as opposed to maybe kind of rely on maybe energy or the force from the universe or from God or something.
I think that's what it, like, you know, rearrange my heart, Lord. I'm speaking to God there. I would like there to be a time where we can all speak to God in our own ways, and I think God is good. I think there's a good force out there, and that is God. And that the very language, the very way we communicate about this ineffable presence in the universe has broken so many people. I hope that there's the capacity for the evolution of language with respect to spirit so that we can find each other again.
Do you believe your music can change hearts?
I don't know. That's not for me to know. I can't know that.
Well, okay, you can't know it, but
people say it does. Some people say it does. I want to hope that what we're doing as a band is meaningful in people's lives.
Rearrange my heart, Lord. Help me to be grateful.
When I hear you guys, I keep thinking, okay, you've told me that there are people who have a strong negative reaction. And my question is it because you're messing around with an Appalachian tradition? Is it because there's Latinos in the band? Is it because there's a protest message? Is it because there are biblical principles that are being discussed in the lyrics? Is it because they may know that one of the members of the band is gay?
It's an assault from all sides, ain't it? Because that's what needs to be happening right now. We need to squelch that fire.
I want to go back to one thing that you said that just really got me, and I. So you're there in North Carolina, and these two women walk up to you, and they said that your music is not good. I know that you're not in her head or anything like that, but what could she mean by that? Is it not good because she kind of has like a standard as to what music should be, what Appalachian music to be, and that you are kind of coloring outside of those lines?
I'm putting out a narrative that is a threat to her narrative, and she's in Brevard, North Carolina. She's on native lands. She's an immigrant as much as I am to the Americas. This land was stolen from people. I think it all goes back to how this country was founded. And then people were brought over as slaves. There is truth in the universe. And the truth is that it's time for restorative justice and rearranging our hearts.
Rearrange My Heart is also the title track of Che Apalache's latest album. It was produced in the basement of world-renowned banjo innovator Bela Fleck, and it got a Grammy nomination for Best Folk Album. Joe Troop learned how to play Appalachian music as a kid and has moved in a new direction. His music is explicitly political. His story has a lot of parallels with another musician I talked with a while ago. Appalachia meets world music and world politics. And we'll hear that story right after this break. I'm Trey Kay, and you're listening to Us and Them from West Virginia Public Broadcasting and PRX.
In difficult times, music gives us peace, brings us together, and helps heal us. It calms our nerves and brightens our days. That's why we're bringing you classic episodes of Mountain Stage on air and in our podcast. This is Larry Gross, host of Mountain Stage. Find something that's familiar or brand new and feel the power of live music on our website, mountainstage.org.
Hey, I'm Trey Kay, and you're listening to Us and Them, which is supported in part by the CRC Foundation and the Daywood Foundation.
Banana?
Banana. I'll take a banana with me.
Not very long ago, I went out to Astoria, Queens to meet with musician Stefan Saeed.
Man, I bought these like yesterday, and they were like almost still a little green. Do you want anything else?
I'm good right now.
All right.
We tried to tune up his son's battered guitar so we could play some music together. But I was mostly interested in talking about Stefan's music.
Early one morning when the sun was down, Flatbush part of New York town. Oh,
hello. You might have heard of Stefan. He made a little national splash back in 1997. Back then, he was known as Stefan Smith. And we'll talk more about that a little bit later. But back in 1997, he released this ballad. And you might recognize the person singing backup vocals. That's Patti Smith, the rock and roll legend. And no, they are not related.
Dragging me from his holding cell, who to one no tongue can tell.
Who ain't my fault?
All one body got a healing blow.
They're singing about Abner Louima, a Haitian man who was in the news headlines back then. He'd been brutally beaten and sexually assaulted by police in New York City.
So Abner in the hospital for a while, four policemen bound for trial.
Be no for one.
And near 10,000 march today, some set to fight and some to pray. All one body gotta heal and grow.
Stefan's dad is from Iraq and his mom's from Austria. But Stefan was born in Ohio and he spent some of his teen years in Appalachia. He actually lived in Monroe and Greenbrier County in southern West Virginia, which is where my grandmother comes from. He says that he was drawn to the people in this area because they make authentic, heartfelt music that's been handed down through the generations. Stefan plays guitar, he plays the fiddle, he plays banjo, and all kinds of instruments. The Village Voice and Billboard magazine have compared him to Woody Guthrie. And he was friends with Pete Seeger. I wanted to talk to Stefan because I think he makes us and them kind of music. We're talking to Stefan Saeed because he's a musician who seeks out culture and political battles. And I mean, he really seeks them out. He's taken his guitar to war zones in Iraq. He's been to refugee camps. He went to Houston after Hurricane Harvey killed dozens of people and caused so much damage. And when he gets to these places, he sits down and he makes music with the local folks. He says he's using his guitar and fiddle and singing to bridge divides between people. One of his current projects is a series of videos.
I'm Stefan Saeed, and this is Borderless, the new series about people at the front lines of change.
I host a docuseries now, which follows me around the world as I go to kind of frontline situations and meet people doing amazing things to make a better world. And, you know, guitar, fiddle in hand, and I make music wherever I go.
Yes.
These videos are beautifully shot, and they often show Stefan in crowds talking and singing with people. And frequently, there are scads of young, smiling kids climbing over him and trying to touch his guitar.
I go to these places because when you're in the face of tragedy or difficulty or conflict or a natural disaster, that's where the best in people also comes out. And that best in people usually transcends all the boundaries around between us, right? It doesn't make any difference when you're at the front lines of some hurricane or a conflict zone, what political party you're in. People got to just help each other. They got to get by, and the best people comes out often. You see the resilience that if we could amplify that, I think we really could bring our world together.
Are there some of the places that you go to where you're actually in danger?
Well, of course, yeah. I mean, you know, imagine I'm in Iraq or I'm in, if I'm in Somalia or something like that or whatever, or if in, you know, favelas or something like that in Brazil, you have to go to a place like that and you have to have part of your crew has to be local, you know, otherwise you're just going to be a target. I've been lucky, I guess, too. Maybe the worst thing hasn't happened to me, right?
Probably if I were to go to one of these places, I'd probably have a recorder like you see in front of you, or I might bring a camera, or I might bring a video camera or something like that. But it seems like your tools are a guitar and a fiddle.
Yeah, I mean, right. Yeah, I'm not without cameras and microphones. But people are introduced to me as, hey, this artist who writes songs about changing the world, you know? So they kind of have this idea that, hey, maybe I guess that I'm a pretty straight-up person and well-intentioned and whatever.
There's a video of you with two young boys. One is kind of doing kind of like a vocal beatbox type of thing, and another person is kind of doing a bit of a hip-hop rap type of thing, and you're playing the guitar, right?
Yeah. Those were they were Syrian kids, and they were in their late teens, and one of them was from Aleppo, and the other one was from Homs. And, you know, two of the most destroyed, I mean, you look at the videos of Homs, it's basically flattened. And these are, you know, 18, 19-year-old kids, and I met them in Piraeus Port in Athens, basically camped out on the asphalt. which, you know, at its peak, it had, like, this is just the port, like, literally the parking lot where the ships come in, and there were 6,000 people there. And these two young gentlemen had met there. They didn't know each other beforehand, but they were both really into hip-hop. ماشي لحال الطريق كله عتمي الغربي والله صعبي ما فرحميني يا أمي حبست جوا الوطن لاني فتحته لتمي عم بشكي من قهري عم بشكي من صغري عم بشكي لانه ما في حدا سند لظهري كنت عم بضحك على حالي كيف غشيت لاخي. You go through a refugee camp, man. Put the microphone in front of everybody you meet and every 10 out of 10 stories is going to blow your mind, right? And here are these kids, and he had this phenomenal rap about, like, starting in homes and what reality was for him and how he tried to speak out and been put in prison and then got out and how he fled with his family. And I was just like, dude, we got to record this.
How quickly does that happen?
It happened in the course of about 15 minutes. As soon as he said it, as soon as I heard the song, I was like, let's go over here and sit down and I'll get out my guitar and just play something underneath it and you beatbox and we'll just lay it down. And then there it was. You know, they were so happy and now we have a document that, yeah, it's cool.
And you haven't played with them again since?
But we stay in touch. They're both friends of mine, social networks, stuff like that, and I watch everything that's up with them. And that's the amazing thing, you know. The whole concept behind Borderless is that it's real, and for me to then go back to these places and to stay in touch with these people. If I film in Houston for Hurricane Harvey or in Iraq or wherever, that let's say 8 months later, I go back there and I work with these people again and we continue the work and deepen it in the community and spread it out and over the course of a few years, expand basically and grow a global network of all these groups and individuals. So it's intrinsic in the idea that we build something. Unlike, let's say, a typical travel show, like a food show, where they basically are in and out and that's it. It's just about the individual content and there's no sustained communication with the community. Obviously, I'm really I'm collaborating with people in these places. I'm not just featuring them.
It's kind of magical, actually. These kids find themselves in a desperate situation living in a refugee camp. And then there's this guy with a guitar and recording equipment who reminds them they're more than just refugees. And he serves as kind of a midwife to their creativity. And the type of thing that happened between you and these two boys, or you called them young men, so maybe I should too, does that type of thing happen over and over again as you make these journeys?
We made our first full-length pilot on the refugee crisis. And I'm in about 17, 18 different settlements of informal or of formal, official camps or informal camps or in streets, parks, whatever. And I'm making music everywhere I go or meet people. Like when I was on the border of Firom, of Macedonia, northern Greece, right by Idomeni, where the biggest camp was, you know, where all the news was about. I meet these Kurdish musicians and they're masters. Like one of them is this highly respected, like local master in northern Syria. And here he's fled and several of his students from the area in northern Syria fled with him. And they're unbelievable musicians, not like pretty good. And the footage is unbelievable. I mean, there we are. They've got the bazookies and suzz or whatever, and we're sitting on the edge of a field in dirt. And they're, you know, five of them singing in harmonies with each other over top of the drum, and it's phenomenal. Those moments happen, right? The sun is setting on the other side, behind the mountain, which is on the other side of the border, where they want to go to, and we're sitting there at the foot and they're making just heavenly music. And I say that as somebody who's heard me, you know, all kinds of amazing music, whether or not it's in, you know, Monroe County, West Virginia, or in Pakistan, right? I grew up, I was born in Cleveland, but we moved out of there when I was 2 months old and moved to Western Pennsylvania, kind of Northern Appalachia. It's beautiful. I mean, it's same mountains as West Virginia. And I was always a country boy at heart from that kind of youth, right? My childhood was spent looking for bear caves. And
when did you start playing music?
Oh, I started before I can remember. I came from a musical family. My mother played piano, and she's from Vienna, Austria, and so a musical place, and insisted all the kids had to play music. So we had to choose an instrument at a young age that we were going to study. But being the youngest of four, all of my older siblings were already playing, so I don't remember not playing piano. I remember even at 3 years old composing, making songs up at the piano. I got my first violin when I was four.
Stefan's played a lot of different kinds of music over the years. He studied classical music as a kid. He learned how to play old-time fiddle. He's played jazz. And he even toured the country with a punk band.
I was playing fiddle with a group called Always August. And so, there I was 17. We were doing shows with Meat Puppets and Fire Hose and, all of them. Wow. Sonic Youth, whatever. But I was 10 years younger than everybody.
Just a kid?
I was way in over my head. But I was so lucky and, to be exposed to that. But I also had a very pointed kind of epiphany doing that, Ooh. I just remember coming back from a national tour, and we were playing in Tulsa, Oklahoma on the way back. And then after we played in Tulsa, going across the heartland and through these farm fields, and we were playing in a context where there's lots of really loud, angry music that was very spot on politically, like addressing it. But I just remember thinking, yeah, but the people we need to be reaching are all these people in these farms and all this. And we're never going to reach them by screaming and banging them over the head. But that's who we need to be getting with. And that's when I was just like, I want to go find something else. I want to, I was really formative then. And that's when I took off to Europe and started migrant farm working. And after that, and divorced myself of commercial culture. I didn't listen to radio. I didn't listen to records. And I just, on the migrant farm working circuit, everything was word of mouth. Music was handed down.
So eventually you come back to the States. And I mean, from what I get from reading about you is that you really kind of embody the folk tradition. You're not really kind of in the scene where you're hanging around with Fire Hose and the Minutemen, and you are kind of seeming more like Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie, no?
I was in all, and I still am, stridently in every style of music, because I think there should only be one style based. There only is music. and to me, if I'm really folk, it's more that it's in the ethos that there be a music that includes everybody, just like a great society should include everybody, and a real democracy should include everybody. So by that token, yeah, did I learn and really... do I know and kind of embody that old folk tradition? Yes, but I also really wanted to reinvent it for a day and age where that combines hip-hop and rap and every world folk music and right, and puts them together in a new music that can bring us, reunite us. Because right now, everybody's just target marketed, segregated from each other more than I think any generation's ever seen.
When you first started to kind of get on the scene and become more known and popular, I think it was the Village Voice that termed you as the heir apparent to Woody Guthrie.
Yeah.
You're smiling as I say that.
Yeah, I mean, I was playing my acoustic music mostly. But, I was still, you find me on a Ween record or hanging out with guys in punk bands or in hip-hop groups or whatever. I was always all over the place, but yeah, I was expressing myself at that point in time playing acoustically. And I wanted that because I wanted to be straight up and I wanted to be clear and simple and understood. And I wanted to make sure that people knew where I was coming from.
Some say hate's what caused this crime. Some say Giuliani time. You hold out my back door. Blame hate on me or blame police. All of us must hold this peace. Somebody gotta hear.
When you recorded the Ballad of Abner Louima with Patti Smith, you recorded that under the name of Stephen Smith, no?
Actually, I hadn't decided. I had been performing as Stephen Saeed, but I would already decide my name was going to be Stephen Saeed. Since I came to New York, that's all I was for a couple of years, and I built my reputation and my career. And I was being courted by major labels at that point in time. And literally, I couldn't decide because major label record execs, two of them, had told me that there's no way I could have a career in America with an Arabic name. And I didn't know what to do. I became, at that moment that I recorded the song with Patti, I was, oh my God, am I going to put this song out as Saeed or as Smith? Patti, to her credit, was like, I like Saeed, you know?
But there was a lot of pressure from record executives. So Stephen's professional name became Stephen Smith.
I cried about it. I cried. I still cry about it. I cry about it. It crushed me. As an artist, as a voice, and, you know, as a person of principle, as a poet, where every single thing that I do depends upon truth.
In 2004, he changed his professional name back to Saeed.
I can't lie to myself and still be the poet that I want to be to serve humankind in the way that I've committed myself to. It's just a matter of integrity. I just feel like that's who I am, that's who I was born, and that's who I should be.
This song, I actually want to go back to West Virginia and make the music video for it. I made filmed a bunch of stuff for it when I was down in Houston for Hurricane Harvey. The song's called I Believe in America. In the Appalachian town where I grew up, we're losing jobs every day. So I went across the country, but it seemed about the same down in Louisiana and L.A. It's like a hurricane coming down on us from the drugs and the poverty. And for all that freedom means today is inequality. But in my heart, I know if there's a hope, it's inside of you and me. And I believe in America. And I believe in a dream. And I believe in America. 'Cause I believe in you and me. You and me. Kid next door's looking awful bored, playing Xbox and it don't believe the news no more. The only thing he sees on his TV is all the things America ain't supposed to be. He's planning on taking a gun to school, but he don't even know why. And all the men behind the curtains just taking us for a ride. But there ain't no way they're gonna win this one, 'cause this dream is never gonna die. And I believe in America. And I believe in a dream. And I believe in America. 'Cause I believe in you and me. And you and me. My brothers are fighting in a foreign land, risking his life for someone else. He's trying to give to the rest of the world what some of us ain't got ourselves. And the politicians on every side can't find a change of heart. Instead of bringing us all together, they just ripping us all apart. But in my heart, I know if there's a way, it's right here about to start. 'Cause I believe in America. And I believe in a dream. And I believe in America. I believe in you and me, you and me.
That's the kind of music I think we need. We need songs that, like, hey, no, this ain't a hip-hop song or a country song. This is an everybody song.
What is your hope and intention? What is it that you hope to achieve?
Well, I hope to be able to find people and lift the stories of people who really are just crossing boundaries and making the world that we want to see today, right now. They're just they're just doing the great work that no matter where you came from, you would think, wow, this is inarguably good. And it tells a story that shows that there's hopefully a majority of humankind across the whole planet that basically wants the same things.
What do they want?
Yeah, they want to live in peace. They want to live equally. They know that the sustainability of the whole planet depends on us finally living more equally together, economically and socially. These are common sense things I think even children get. But we live in a generation now where we basically have to be the first generation that actually starts to make that dream a reality, that dream that was Christ's dream or was MLK's dream or whoever you might relate it to. That eternal dream of humanity. People feel that way all around the world.
When I first met Stefan, he'd just gone to Charlottesville on the one-year anniversary of the violent clashes between white nationalists and the counter-protesters that led to injuries and a death. And while there, a large group of people gathered together to sing his song, We the People.
We are one and we're many. We all want to be free. We the people marching onward till we get equality.
Since then, his Borderless project has grown, and his schedule now includes travels to Palestine, Israel, Kashmir, Iraq, Brazil, and South Africa.
We the people marching onward.
This whole hour has been about musical activism. Music as confronter, truth teller, the thread that mends the tear. And balm that heals the soul. Musicians like Stefan Saeed, Joe Troop, and the guys from Che Apalache, they tell stories. Sometimes the music is about us, and sometimes it's about them. But when it's done just right, it has a way of slipping into our ears and sharing a truth. You've been listening to Us and Them. Our team for this episode is me, Trey Kay, Chris Julin, Loretta Williams, and Kate Smith. Michael Lipton and Tristan Lozow wrote and performed the Us and Them show music. Mark Lerner designed our logo. The wonderful people at PRX and West Virginia Public Broadcasting make Us and Them possible. So do grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the CRC Foundation, and the Daywood Foundation. Us and Them was originally developed with the assistance of the mentorship program at AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio. We'll see you next time on Us and Them.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.